Let's continue in our talks from Genesis by reading Genesis chapter 21, verses 22 through 34. Now, in this last section of Genesis 21, we have a non-aggression pact made between Abraham and Abimelech, one of the early Philistine kings. Genesis 21, beginning at verse 22. And it came to pass at that time that Abimelech and Phicol, the commander of his army, spoke to Abraham, saying, God is with you in all that you do. Now therefore swear to me by God that you will not deal falsely with me, with my offspring, or with my posterity, but that according to the kindness that I have done to you, you will do to me and to the land in which you have dwelt. And Abraham said, I will swear. Then Abraham rebuked Abimelech because of a well of water which Abimelech's servants had seized. And Abimelech said, I do not know who has done this thing. You did not tell me, nor had I heard of it until today. So Abraham took sheep and oxen and gave them to Abimelech, and the two of them made a covenant. And Abraham set 7 ewe lambs of the flock by themselves. Then Abimelech asked Abraham, what is the meaning of these 7 ewe lambs which you have set by themselves? And he said, you will take these 7 ewe lambs from my hand, that they may be my witness that I have dug this well. Therefore he called that place Beersheba, because the two of them swore an oath there. Thus they made a covenant at Beersheba. So Abimelech rose with Phicol, the commander of his army, and they returned to the land of the Philistines. Then Abraham planted a tamarisk tree in Beersheba, and there called on the name of the Lord, the everlasting God. And Abraham stayed in the land of the Philistines many days. Let's begin this last section of chapter 21 with a few background notes. In Genesis chapter 20, we read that Abraham had migrated into the land area controlled by Abimelech. Abimelech was one of the early Philistine kings in the land of Canaan. You remember that Abraham lied about his wife at that time in order to protect his own life. He said that Sarah was his sister. As a result, Abimelech took Sarah into his harem, but God overruled and protected Sarah. Now here in Genesis 21, Abraham has moved to the area which would become known even to this day as Beersheba. We see that Abimelech was no small king, as his control and influence reached even to the Beersheba area at this time. Look once again at verse 34. And Abraham stayed in the land of the Philistines many days. The fact that Abimelech now wants to make a covenant with Abraham shows that Abraham has increased in wealth and power. Notice how Abimelech brings Phicol, the general of his army, along with him to this summit meeting. Abraham is not just some small-time Bedouin shepherd in the area. No, he's become quite wealthy and quite powerful. You remember how Abraham, back in Genesis 14, was able to defeat the kings of the east with his small, well-trained army. So Abraham has become a major force in the area, and Abimelech desires to ensure peaceful coexistence for the future by making a treaty. Abraham agrees, and in accordance with the customs of that day, they cut a covenant. The sheep and oxen given by Abraham in verse 27 were cut in two, and the covenant was ratified. The extra 7 ewe lambs given to Abimelech by Abraham were to emphasize that the treaty included Abraham's exclusive right to the well which he had dug at Beersheba. Verse 30, and he said, you will take these 7 ewe lambs from my hand, that they may be my witness that I have dug this well. You know, there's an ancient well near the ruins of ancient Beersheba that you can visit today. It's called Abraham's Well, and it may be this very well. Beersheba in Hebrew means well of the oath or well of the 7 after the 7 ewe lambs. We can't be sure exactly what the name means, but in any case, Beersheba became well known in biblical history. In fact, the land of Israel is still referred to as the land from Dan to Beersheba. Well, so much for background notes. Now let's move to our doctrinal or teaching points from this last section of Genesis 21. Doctrinal or teaching point number one, believers should try to live peaceably with unbelievers. believers should try to live peaceably with unbelievers. Now, we know that the Bible teaches that we should work at living in peace with fellow believers. Well, the Bible also teaches that we should work at living in peace with unbelievers. Romans chapter 12 and verse 18 says, "If it is possible, as much as depends on you, live peaceably with all men." And Hebrews chapter 12 verse 14 says, "Pursue peace with all people." So believers should try to live peaceably with unbelievers. We have a great illustration and an example of this truth seen here in chapter 21, don't we? Abraham the believer and Abimelech the unbeliever make a peace treaty. Rather than pick a fight over this well that Abimelech's servants had seized, Abraham made it part of this peace treaty. And notice from verse 23 that the treaty is not just for immediate peace, but for long-lasting peace. The offspring and their posterity are considered. So there was a real effort here to live at peace with one another. Well, we should do the same. Believers should try to live peaceably with unbelievers. We should try to live at peace with our unbelieving neighbors and our unbelieving colleagues at work and our unbelieving student friends on the college campus, even though they are unbelievers and usually don't want to hear the gospel from us. We should still try to live at peace with them in reference to other matters. Illustration: when our two sons were preteens, we had a skateboard ramp in our backyard. The neighbors on one side of us did not appreciate the noise that this skateboard ramp generated as the skateboards are going up and down on the skateboard ramp. So we worked out a peace treaty. The skateboard ramp was open only during certain hours of the day. During the evening hours, when the neighbors were sitting out in their backyard, there was no skateboarding. The treaty worked, and our neighbors appreciated us for this. They really did. Now, maybe I should add that our neighbors had an older relative who lived with them, and he was a little disappointed because he was hard of hearing, so the noise didn't bother him, and he used to enjoy watching our boys skateboard. And now his entertainment was cut in half. Well, I think you see the point of the illustration. Whether it be unbelieving neighbors or unbelieving colleagues or unbelieving friends, as believers, we should try to live peaceably with them. Sometimes it's very difficult, but believers should try to live peaceably with unbelievers. Doctrinal point number two: believers should not jettison justice for the sake of peace. Believers should not jettison justice for the sake of peace. In establishing the peace treaty, Abraham did not just toss justice aside. No way. Abimelech's servants had wrongly seized a well that belonged to Abraham. That was not right. The wrong must be righted. Fortunately, in this case, when Abimelech heard about this theft, he agreed that justice must be served, and Abraham's well was given back to him in the treaty. So in living peaceably with our unbelieving neighbors or unbelieving colleagues at work or unbelieving friends, we are not asked to sweep sin under the rug or pretend that some injustice didn't take place. No, believers should not jettison justice for the sake of peace. Now, we can always give up our rights in the interest of peace, but we should not jettison justice or throw justice away in the interest of peace with unbelievers. Do you understand the difference? See if I can illustrate with another neighbor story, different neighbors this time. We had a set of nice-sounding wind chimes that someone had given us. We did not realize that the sound of the wind chimes bothered our neighbors. Now, when our neighbors told us about it, what do you think we did? We took the wind chimes down. We didn't have to. They weren't that loud. This was our right to have wind chimes on the back patio. But in the interest of peace, we gave up that right and took down the wind chimes. But notice that justice was not jettisoned. Now compare that to, let's say, a situation where your neighbor comes over in the middle of the night and moves the property line 3 feet in his favor. Now a crime has been committed. That's wrong. As a believer, you're not called on to ignore this wrong in the interest of peace. No way. It would be wrong not to bring this crime to light, not to have justice served. You don't let the unbeliever get away with sin. Do you see the difference? Believers should not jettison justice for the sake of peace. Well, those two doctrinal points clearly are taught to us in this portion of Genesis 21. Now, what about some more practical application? Practical application number one. Do your non-Christian friends have to say, "Don't deal falsely with me"? Do your non-Christian friends have to say, "Don't deal falsely with me"? It was obvious to Abimelech that God was blessing Abraham. Look back at verse 22. Abimelech said to Abraham, "God is with you in all that you do." Then why does Abimelech go on to say in verse 23, "Swear to me by God that you will not deal falsely with me"? Why does Abimelech have to say that? Because Abraham had lied to Abimelech in the past. In chapter 20, he had lied to Abimelech about Sarah, his wife. What a sad testimony. On the one hand, it could not be denied that God was with Abraham. But on the other, Abimelech has to say, "Don't deal falsely with me." Do your non-Christian friends have to say, "Don't deal falsely with me"? Do you have a consistent testimony? How sad it is when our non-Christian friends and neighbors and colleagues know on the one hand that we're Christians, but on the other hand, they still have to say, "Don't deal falsely with me." Do your non-Christian friends have to say, "Don't deal falsely with me"? Practical application number two. Do you know God as El Olam? Do you know God as El Olam? Verse 33. Then Abraham planted a tamarisk tree in Beersheba, and there called on the name of the Lord, El Olam, the everlasting God, or the God of eternity. Now, as you know, there are a number of names by which God reveals himself in the Bible. El Olam, or God of eternity, in this context, emphasizes the immutability of God, that God does not change as everything else changes. People change, time change, situations change. God does not change. There is continuity and stability associated with God as El Olam. This is the name for God that's used in Isaiah chapter 40, verse 28. I'm reading Isaiah 40, 28 through 31. Have you not known? Have you not heard? The everlasting God, El Olam, the Lord, the creator of the ends of the earth, neither faints nor is weary. His understanding is unsearchable. He gives power to the weak, and to those who have no might, he increases strength. Even the youths shall faint and be weary, and the young men shall utterly fall. But those who wait on the Lord shall renew their strength. They shall mount up with wings like eagles. They shall run and not be weary. They shall walk and not faint. Do you know God as El Olam?